So there's a point at which something happens today, right?
No.
Or is it just 3 hours of drinking?
Tasting. Yeah, there's a dinner. There's food. We'll have you eating.
This is KCBX Public Radio for the Central Coast. I'm Father Ian Dellinger, and I'm playing with food.
This is the grand tasting, which means...
No, this is the rare and reserve.
The rare and reserve tasting, which means...
There's about 60 wineries pouring tomorrow. There's 30 of them pouring tonight. But they're all pouring something that they're not pouring tomorrow.
Okay.
So something, a reserve wine, a club wine, a barrel sample.
So we need to make sure we try every single one, is what you're saying.
Get going.
You're hearing the sounds of the Garagiste Festival in Atascadero. What is a Garagiste Festival? It's a wine festival. What's unique about this particular wine festival? It's celebrating wines from wineries that produce fewer than 1,500 cases annually. That's what makes them Garagiste. We'll get a better understanding of that term in a minute, but let's have a quick sip with a vintner, surrounded by the joyous sounds of the festival, before getting a taste of what Garagiste really is.
I'm Taylor Matheson. I'm a winemaker. I've got Cutbow Wines. I also help make wine at Levo Vineyard in Tin City.
Your bottles have Avery labels on them. Can you tell me why?
These are just barrel samples, so I haven't created any labels for these. I'm a big outdoors guy. I grew up hunting and fishing. I'm a steward of the land. Nature is one of the best things in the entire world that was put on this earth and that we can go and appreciate it. We've got feathers on one label, fly fishing reel on another label, and that's kind of our deal.
So how long have you been doing this?
Cutbow started in 2022. That was our first vintage. We bottled that just this last summer, so summer of 2024.
Tell me about the Syrah.
2023 Syrah from Jack Creek Vineyards, Willow Creek, AVA. It's like the most westerly site in Willow Creek. So it's got some pretty cool climate characteristics. 30% stem inclusion in this. Wanted to get some spiciness, you know, that black pepper, a little bit of meaty, almost like reduction, but super fruit driven as well. Fun site to work with, good family friends, the owners out there as well. They kind of gave us a shot of making wine and buying some fruit from them. We did 3 barrels, all once used oak, kind of in between a neutral and a brand new barrel.
Taylor and his Cutbow Winery is a perfect example of the Garagiste category of winemaking. Small, specific, passionate. On my podcast site, you can see a photo of Taylor with a bottle with one of his real labels rather than one with the Avery mailing labels. We'll come back to the festival in a couple minutes, but let's have a chat with the festival's founders and discover the world of Garagiste wines.
I'm Stuart McLennan, one of the co-founders and current president of Garagiste Festival.
And I'm Doug Minnick, Stuart's partner in co-founding the Garagiste Festival.
What is this festival and where does the name come from?
The term Garagiste, I came across, I was doing some research, and Robert Parker had taken a trip to Bordeaux. He went to this chateau, and the people in the chateau said, "Where are you going next?" He said, "I'm going to this winery." And they were like, "Oh, no, they're Garagistes. You don't, no, you know, garbage." Well, it turns out a lot of those wineries became left bank wineries, a whole movement there. And they were just winemakers who didn't have a chateau, didn't come from the manor born and still wanted to make wine and were skilled winemakers. And because France is France, thought, well, that's an interesting word. You know, that kind of fits. So I pitched it to Doug and Doug goes, "Well, what's it mean, man?" I said to some people who were winemakers, you know, we're doing this thing, Garagiste Festival. I don't know. What is that? Garagiste. I don't know whether I want to be called a Garagiste. Cut to a couple of years later, we've had a couple of festivals now. New York Times is doing an article on Garagiste wineries. They suddenly want to become a Garagiste. Yeah. They're happy to be called a Garagiste. You know, we get an inquiry. Hey, you know, I'm thinking of opening this wine bar and calling Garagiste Wine Bar. And so this wood, whilst it existed in France and was used in France, it was never really existing in California. For the most part, American winemaking. We've been very careful to make it a definition that when people use it, it doesn't necessarily invoke the garage. It invokes small, handcrafted, small production, intensely handworked artisan wines. It's kind of the antithesis, actually, of, I'm making a cowboy in the garage. This is kind of the next level of that. Although, no snobs. We don't want it to be a snobby thing. These people know a lot about wine, but very few of them will get in front of you and go, "Oh," but we kind of frown on that.
You're listening to KCBX Public Radio. I'm Father Ian, and I'm at the Garagiste Wine Festival in Atascadero. We just heard founders Doug and Stuart describe Garagiste as small producers under 1,500 cases annually, but why a festival? So when did you co-found this and why?
In 2011, and because we felt there was a need, particularly in this area originally, to support some of the smaller men and women who are making wine. A lot of them don't have tasting rooms, so they don't have the volume to be able to afford a tasting room, or they're on their way up. So we said they needed a venue, and we started, and it's grown exponentially as a result.
These were our friends. These were the wines that we drank, and we knew how good the wines were. But when you're just a small mom and pop operation, you feel like you're kind of working all by yourself, kind of in isolation. And Stuart knew a lot of these small winemakers and wanted to give it a center, give the movement a center and a name, and shine a spotlight on these kinds of winemakers and bring them all together. So we decided to try a festival, an event, to bring them all together in one day. We didn't know what we had. We knew at least we'd have one day of drinking some really good wine, which we did.
That was a success. First one was like, yeah, okay, that's good. We should do this again.
It was very, very popular. Then the winemakers in Santa Barbara asked us to bring it down there, so we did that. Now, 14 years later, we do this Paso event, which is the flagship event every year. This is our 13th one in our 14th year. Thank you, COVID. We also now do them in Solvang for the San Ynez wineries, Sonoma for the wineries up there, and one in Los Angeles, which is kind of for all of the wineries.
When you first started in 2011 and you had a great night of drinking wine, how many wineries were there and how many drinkers were there? Tasters were there.
I want to say it was like 300 or 400, and we had what?
40 wineries.
40 wineries, yeah. When we first started out.
In these 14 years, have you seen any of these small wineries blossom? And you can define blossom however you want to.
Oh, absolutely. So we have some wineries that are small and have been small and are going to stay small. And then we have a lot of new wineries that sort of launch with us. If anyone's ever been to Tin City between Templeton and Paso, about 80% of the tasting rooms in Tin City are wineries that started pouring at the Garagiste Festival before they had a tasting room. So Tin City is almost like kind of the year-round manifestation of the Garagiste Festival.
Not everyone wants to grow. Some people are very happy to remain small, very boutique-y. Others have aspirations to grow into a larger winery. We've seen that happen in many that have started with us and who are now sort of established brands. Carl Balker at Caliza, started pouring with us. Off the top of my head, I can't tell you how many, but quite a few. But it's not necessarily a thing that everyone wants to grow out of this, because there's a lot of pain comes with growth, as you well know. In the wine business, there are various cutoffs along the way. If you're going to get to X thousand cases, well, that means you have to have distribution. Then that means you have a sales force. That means you have a national sales force, and so on and so on and so on. And you get further away from actually making wine. The other thing about our festival, 9 times out of 10, like even tonight, you will find the winemaker behind the table. And we've made a point of trying to put as many winemakers in front of our audience as possible. So when we say to people, if you want a table at our festival, we expect you to show up. So you're not having a conversation like you would have had with me when I was doing national sales and I was at Pebble Beach or whatever representing the winery. You're actually talking to the winemaker. You're talking about their aims, their ambitions, what they want to do, why they like this variety.
One of the things about wineries of this size is because we're so small, we don't make enough wine for a distributor to be interested. So there's freedom in that. We also don't have to make what distributors want. They want wines to put on supermarket shelves or in restaurants. They want Cabernet and Pinot and Chardonnay, which is fine. We have plenty of that. But because most of these winemakers sell direct to consumer, you're able to pursue your real passions of maybe unusual varieties or styles that you won't find anywhere else. I think this is getting close to the 40th event we've done over the past 14 years. And I am still finding grape varieties I've never even heard of because somebody fell in love. I fell in love with this variety in Greece. And then I found a farmer who's got 2 acres of it, and they make 3 barrels of it. And here it is. And they're super passionate about it. And it's excellent. But you can get away with that. You can make that work making 3 or 4 barrels or something because you're selling it direct to consumer. You can never make it work on a larger scale.
Yeah, you know, when you're in a larger market, you can't sell 5 million varieties. But here, I mean, you can come tomorrow and tonight, you probably taste maybe 30 different varieties of wine. Then there'll be trends that'll come out of that. I've noticed a lot more people making Tempranillo now. Some of the Spanish varieties are coming to be made more. Then there's Italian varieties. People are making Sangio. They're making Barberas. You know, they're doing the big Tuscan blends. They're doing all these things that were boutique-y or very small market. And our festival gives them exposure. The quality of these wines is top notch. You know, a few years ago, I was just amazed at the consistency of quality and how that's just now, it's like at a plane where you would rarely go in there and go, the wines are always well made. They're cared for and these people love them like they're their little babies. For me, this is like doing the best with what you have that year and as little intervention as possible. And that to me always bespeaks a really good wine.
Stuart mentioned that garage yeast winemakers sometimes like to experiment with lesser known grape varietals. So I sought some of those out.
Malvasia Bianca is a white grape from Greece, Italy, Portugal. It's only grown in a few places. It's very unique, very unique flavor. I get mine from Madeira in the valley. I've been hunting them down because I want to get some more of those grapes.
Carmenere is a grape varietal. It's known as the lost grape of Bordeaux, thought to be extinct, and then they found it in South America, was able to bring it back to California through a Davis study. And I think in 1990s is when they were able to provide it to winemakers in California.
Felicidade is Portuguese for joy, bliss, and happiness, but the grape is called Arinto. There's only about 20 acres planted in the entire U.S. The U.S. government doesn't recognize it as an official grape name, and that's why I had to give it a fanciful name. And it's such a bright and happy wine, I thought that word fit it perfectly. Those grapes are grown at Pierce Ranch Vineyard in southern Monterey County. They specialize in growing Portuguese and Spanish varieties.
And the following day, at the bigger event in Paso Robles, I sought out some vintners who are doing the best with what they have.
I'm Fio DeRodiff, and I'm the proprietor and winemaker at Rockbound Cellars.
My name is Cece Aguirre, and I'm the owner and winemaker of Loom.
How long have you been making wine?
For about 4 years now. This is my fourth harvest.
Since 2017, so 8 years.
Both of you are fairly new at making wine. How's the journey been?
Amazing. I've loved winemaking from the very beginning, and it's still my full-time day job, and it just turned into a passion project starting in 2021. We just love what we do so much that we do it in our free time.
So you have another job?
I do. I work full-time at a winery already, so this is my before and my after work and my weekend job.
For me, it's been a crazy experience because my previous career was actually working at the NASA Center in Mountain View, and I did that for 15 years. I was more in like the finance and contracts area, and then I completely changed my career and planted our vineyard and started making wine with our consultant winemaker, Molly Lonborg, and she's been an amazing mentor, and it's been a real, very rewarding journey for me to try something completely new that I had no experience with, and the more I do it, the more I love it, and it's just been a great, great, great time so far. So we're looking forward to sharing our wines with everyone. We just released our inaugural vintage at Rockbound, so we're excited to pour it here at Garage Yeast.
For both of you, this is your first time at this festival. It's only been, what, an hour and a half?
This has been such a pleasure because not only is it our first ever pouring at Garage Yeast, it's our first time sharing our wines completely. We've never even poured at an event in general. You know, we just became legal a few months. This is our first, you know, exposure and getting to see people face to face and the reception to our wines. And it's just been very rewarding already.
How's the reception been?
Great. Better than I expected. It's a big confidence booster to do something you love. And like I said, we started in 2021. So this has been a long time coming to finally be able to share these wines and get some reactions and just make it all worthwhile.
It's been really great, like getting all the feedback from people trying our wines for the first time ever. And also just kind of networking with other producers that are our size, that are small, that are doing all the work themselves, that have just put in a lot of work to be here. And this is an outlet that we don't get anywhere else. And so people that come here to this event know that, and they appreciate the wine and the process, and they really take their time to kind of taste through and understand the owners and the winemakers and the people behind the table. And I think it's all part of that experience, and Garage Yeast, I think, really brings that to life.
You see some friends here?
Yeah, I do, because the community here in Paso is really amazing. Like, you end up meeting a lot of other producers that are on kind of in the same boat that you are, and we all help each other out. We've borrowed things from each other. We talk to each other. We're not afraid to really have this network of helping hands. And I've reached out to people that I don't even know before, and they are willing to help, to lend a hand, whether it's when winemaking or when we have tasting events. I see people that have helped me throughout this crazy journey just here in this room.
This group in particular is just very special, like-minded individuals. And most people, I think, would agree this is our passion project. We hope it becomes something that is beyond that and not just a hobby and something something worthwhile. I love seeing all the referrals left and right, like so-and-so table sent you to us and vice versa. It's just the camaraderie and the community within this room is really special.
What's one thing that has surprised you today?
I think one thing that surprised me the most is how serious the customers take the wine. We just started doing this maybe a year ago. A lot of the other festivals seems like people are just there to like drink. But here people come, they have a notebook and they're taking notes and they really look for people like us, new producers, and they want to try new things. And we want to share our wines with people that appreciate the wines like that. So I think that was something that so far I've taken from this event. People are very honest of what they think about wine is another surprise, I guess. So far, we've had really positive feedback, and it's just very reassuring that we're doing the right thing, that we're on the right track, and that we're going to keep doing what we're doing for everyone to enjoy. So that's been great.
I think I'll second that. I am really impressed by this group of individuals that seek out an event like this, and they're looking for those producers that are just getting their feet off the ground or that are small and maybe want to stay small. They're an educated customer and group of people interested in not only what you made, but why you made it and what your brand is and how can they find you. And it's just the ideal group to be pouring for when people are that excited to discover you.
Last night I was talking to Stuart and Doug, who are the founders, and they told me that no snobs allowed. Is it really a no snobs allowed event in your experience?
Oh, definitely. I think it's more of an interest and an educated customer without them trying to tell us how to do our jobs. Just a very educated customer who's excited to learn everything about your story and your startup and the wines that you're making.
Yeah, and it looks like most of the attendees here, they're just genuinely interested in learning about the wines and tasting through the wines and learning about us as people as well. I haven't ran into any snobs at all. I think everybody's got a smile on their face and they just want to try good wine, and that's pretty much like all it is.
You're listening to KCBX Public Radio. I'm Father Ian, and I'm at the Garagiste Wine Festival in Paso Robles. I got the opportunity to talk with Gary Eberle, who came to the Paso Robles wine region in 1972 when there were 3 wineries and 200 acres of grapes. Though he's not a Garagiste winemaker, he has had an outsized influence on the wine industry in North San Luis Obispo County. He had a few bits of advice for the new winemakers. What does the festival mean to you?
I think it's a great way for people that have a passion for wine to get into our business and see if they are really destined to stay in it. This is a hard industry. With rare exception, unless you win the lottery, it takes about 10 years for a winery to actually start breaking even and making money. And you have to have the passion and some sort of income, a wife working or a teacher or something, to be able to keep it up. Typically, if you can stay in the business 8-10 years and get over the point people are starting to recognize your label and the quality of your wine, that you can become successful. I started my winery in 83, and it was 1991 before I broke even. To get a label established and build up a clientele and a reputation that will propel you off into the future, you need to be able to think about at least 8 years of feeding it and living off of something else. It takes sort of a special mindset or whatever to recognize that this isn't an industry, it's not a job, it's a lifestyle.
At the Garagiste Wine Festival, I saw quite a few younger people who are making wine, really eager and enthusiastic, are probably learning firsthand some of the things that you said about you've got to be basically married to this for at least a decade before it starts becoming lucrative. Any advice you have for the budding new Garagiste winemaker?
Make sure it's what you really want to do. Don't look at it as just something that looks like it might be fun. Look at it that it is. I mean, if you want to be successful, you had better be absolutely in love with this business. You better be extrovert and you better like people. Of course, you better know how to make good wine too.
The Garagiste Festival certainly lives up to its original intention, with almost a winery a day in each of Santa Barbara and San Luis Obispo counties, and just under 2 wineries a weekend in Monterey County. The Central Coast needs a venue to discover the less showy wines all in one place. And one winemaker said it the best.
The festival's really great. You know, they really gave a platform for smaller wineries to be showcased and for people to get to find them, because I have a tasting room, but probably half of the wineries and winemakers involved in Garagiste don't. So it's really important way to bring everybody together. It's also just a wonderful group of people. It's a lot of good camaraderie, a lot of really nice people that are on the winemaking side, and also it just draws a really great crowd. I really look forward to the tastings. Always good people.
This is KCBX Public Radio for the Central Coast. I'm Father Ian, and I'm Playing with Food.